way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, driving by the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down real life, if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog of that key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you running down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com. You can reach us through either channel. Well, we just stagger from one embarrassment and disgrace to another. Toronto's Negro Chief of Police, Mark Saunders, was at a protest today. One of the Black Lives Matter protests, which, from what we can tell, was largely peaceful. And he got down on his on a knee and, as they say, took a knee. This is a symbol of disrespect for our institutions and is taking a political stand. It's the stand of people like Colin Kaepernick, the American football player, who made the accusation, the wildly overstated accusation that police were across America were racists. Now, there's no doubt there have been incidents of police brutality against whites too, incidentally. But this is an overtly political statement made to appease the mob, or for him to look good. The brother is one of us. I suggest this is a disaster. Some businesses in downtown Toronto are now boarding up windows. Apparently plywood, believe it or not, in a nation that produces, is a major wood producer, is in short supply. There's a lot of apprehension about several protests that are going to occur tomorrow. And there are rumors that a group of anarchists from Montreal who show up all in black, of course masks, will be out as well, looking for trouble. We will be at Queen's Park tomorrow, the Canadian Association for Free Expression, and many other patriots as part of our ongoing in the lockdown protests. So it should be an interesting day tomorrow. Further, or perhaps far more important in terms of national disgrace, was the participation of the Prime Minister of this country in a protest in Ottawa today, another one of these Black Lives Matter protests. He also took a knee, knelt down on one knee. This is a pathetic act of submission and subservience. And you have to ask yourself, well, he has in his hands federal political power. I mean, he's the Prime Minister. He isn't some guy in the street. What is he protesting? I mean, he's the government. We are in a season of lunacy, and it really worries me. People, and I'm not just talking about marginal people at the bottom or iffy people who could probably have mental issues, but significant people, are sad to say, seem to have taken leave of their senses. You have to ask yourself, well, what is this idiot protesting? I mean, he's the one in power. Like, well, are you protesting yourself? He's, of course, an old drama queen. He was a middle school supply teacher in drama for a couple of semesters in Vancouver. His teaching career is not exactly long or stellar, but at heart he's a clown. I was going to say a showman, but that would, I think, give him more credit than he actually deserves. So he loves to be able to put on an act. The problem is he's the Prime Minister of the country. Surely, please, God, show some dignity. There's another problem that even one of the, I'd say, kind of squishy talk show hosts in Toronto. Her name is Barb DiGiulio, and she comes on at 7 o'clock on weeknights. She made this point, which I think tonight, I think it was a good one. And her point was this. Well, what, we've been told about social distancing. In the province of Ontario, we are not supposed to meet in groups of larger than five, unless they're members of the same household. Yeah, so if you've got a wife and a husband and four kids, you don't have to put a kid out in the doghouse. But, well, and 2 weeks ago, tomorrow, 2 weeks ago Saturday, there was all sorts of establishment huffing and puffing and raging. Because about 10,000 people gathered in a large park in downtown West Central Toronto called excuse me. Anyway, in this particular park, and the complaints were that some of them were too close together. There wasn't social distancing and all that, and they shouldn't be gathered there. This was in Trinity Bellwoods Park, so there was a great deal of teeth grinding and carrying on about it, and we believe that the Premier of the province of Ontario, as punishment, decided not to announce a moderate rollback in some of the lockdown conditions. Well, we're going to punish those people. We'll see what you did. It's so demeaning a way to treat adults. But anyway. There's all this worry about the failure of social distancing. This large, well, what are these large gatherings, these protests of Negroes? There were about 3,000 or 4,000 of them on the streets of Toronto last Saturday, along with white scallywags as well. There were large numbers. I don't think I've seen the exact count. In downtown Toronto today, there was this gathering on Parliament Hill in Ottawa, of a couple of thousand, it would appear. Well, where are the denunciations of that? But more to the point, why are prominent people like the chief of police, Mark Saunders in Toronto, and the trust fund kid, Prime Minister Trudeau, and several of his cabinet ministers, including the appalling Ahmed Hassan, who was, for a good deal of Trudeau's first term, the Minister of Immigration. Yeah, it's great. Hassan came to Canada as a 15-year-old refugee, in quotation marks, from Somalia. He went on to become a lawyer, an immigration lawyer, of course, working for his people, not for our people. Got elected. It was head of the Canadian Somali Association at one point. Got elected, and Prime Minister Trudeau made him Minister of Immigration. It would be the equivalent of making the fox the doorkeeper of the henhouse. I mean, and of course, immigration policies under Ahmed Hassan have gone from terrible to even worse. Anyway, Hassan was bitching and moaning a couple of days ago that, well, he knew what it was like to be, if you feel racist. I mean, he's being followed by the police at times. Well, I only say, go back to Mogadishu. I am sure the conditions there would suit you a lot better. And, you know, you have to call these people on their absolute nerve. If I were to go to Somalia, well, first of all, would I be able to be a citizen? Well, probably not. But supposing I were, you think I could get myself elected and then be made a senior cabinet minister, you know, let's say Minister of the Interior, or Minister of Fisheries or something, or Ministry of Piracy? Well, okay, it's a bit of a joke, but of course it wouldn't be. But these people have the nerve to come over here, get treated like royalty, and still continue to bitch and moan. Well, he was up there on Parliament Hill, too. I think he took an E2. Now, there's a huge degree of hypocrisy in this. Do those insiders know something that many of us suspect? And that is, this is all a big scandemic. That, while there is such a thing as Wuhan flu, and it's a bad flu, and it will kill people, as do other flus. And it was particularly dangerous to people with severe medical problems. Primarily the very old, whose bodies in many ways are compromised, or younger people with, let's say, severe obesity and breathing problems. Yeah, I don't suggest that the Wuhan flu or COVID-19 or whatever you want to call it, it doesn't exist. The thing is, though, is it the absolutely life-threatening, shut down the nation sort of thing that we've been led to believe? Well, there's significant reason to think many members of the establishment don't think there's a big problem. I mean, just look at the way Trudeau acts. He has refused to recall Parliament. That's our democratic institution, the way we are governed. He has ruled as a virtual dictator in a state of emergency for now going on 4 months. This is unacceptable. If any institution in Canada is an essential service, it's the elected parliament. And if any member of that parliament feels he or she cannot serve, I'm too scared, it's outside my comfort zone, by all means do the honorable thing and resign and let someone else who's prepared to take a risk do your job. Anyway, Trudeau has hidden out at his cottage at Harrington Lake outside of Ottawa for the better part of a little over 2 months. All because of COVID, the Wuhan flu, coronavirus, whatever excuse they want to use. And you have to keep up that social distancing. That might break down if you have all 330 members of Parliament gathered together in Parliament. Yeah, it might break down. That's a risk we have to take. Or I should say, they should have to take. Well, he won't. But he will come out to a big mob scene for Black Lives Matter, and even to take a knee, as they say, or bend down on one knee to show his submissiveness to the rabble. And it certainly makes me wonder, actually confirms in my opinion that this coronavirus has been used as a power grab. I'm not saying there isn't a coronavirus, I'm not saying there isn't a certain aspect of reality to it, but the reaction has been bouncing off the wall, over the top, crazy. Well, speaking of which, the mass media, particularly the TV and the radio, on and on and on and on about Black Lives Matter, death at the hands of racist policemen, and so on. There's an active egging on of these protests, and one of the things that I see is just a pounding away of this anti-white ideology. If you were not well read or well informed, you might conclude that most black males die, if not from illness, of gunshots from police. That is absolutely, utterly false. What is one of the major causes of death for young black males between, I think, the ages of 16 and 34? You know what it is? It's not motor vehicle accidents. It's not police shooting them. It's other young black males killing them. The young black male is in greater danger from another young black male than he is from a police officer by an absolutely country mile. But this is assiduously hidden by most of our lamestream media, our fake news media. Toronto gets very exercised about shootings and about what's usually called gang violence. And very often with no further explanation. And that invites the naive or the well-meaning to flesh out gang in a misleading way. You know, you one might think, well, maybe it's the East End boys against the West End boys. Or if you wanted ethnicities, well, maybe it's some sort of whites against Chinese or Vietnamese against Chinese, or, and that would be almost entirely wrong. The gangs in Toronto are overwhelmingly black, usually Jamaican, or Somali, if you wish to make a distinction between Somalis and blacks. And anthropologically, there is a slight distinction. When you read of gang shootings, the victims are almost always black, and a very important and here, the perpetrators are almost always black. It's not white guys going around hunting poor little blacks to shoot them, and it's not police roaming around late at night to try to find some poor black walking along the road and blowing him away. Now, that is largely suppressed from us. And the result is people have having a very erroneous impression of what's happening, and are being prone, and we see a lot of examples of this, to just sickening white guilt. Now, you know, that is the, some might say, the charm of white people, or an advanced, we're more highly evolved, some might say, but it is also a weakness. No other race is susceptible to guilt manipulation the way whites are. In fact, and this might go back to Christianity, which ruled to some extent by making us feel guilty. And, you know, it made us more likely to stick to the straight and narrow because we feel guilty. There may be other reasons as well, but guilt is a powerful tool for manipulating people. Now, I'm not suggesting that people shouldn't feel guilt. But what they should feel guilt for, though, is something that they personally did. Hypothetically, I back out of my driveway one day, and I'm not paying too close attention, and my neighbor's kid has left, for some silly reason, a bicycle on the sidewalk, and I run over his bicycle and I destroy it. Okay, I would feel a certain degree of, maybe not guilt exactly, but responsibility. Or in this case, I guess it would be co-responsibility. Yes, I should have watched more carefully, but the kid should not have left the bicycle on my driveway. But okay, I would feel some responsibility. And I perhaps might go next door to my neighbor and say, listen, this is what happened. Why don't we go 50-50? Your kid shouldn't have left the bicycle on my driveway, but on the other hand, I should have been more careful. I take responsibility for it. And, you know, if you want to say, call that guilt or not, but that's healthy. Things get solved. The sort of guilt, though, that is used to manipulate us is what I call sick guilt. For instance, we hear a lot about systemic racism. And, you know, you will, people will say, and I see this is a way to try to short-circuit that, but I personally am, I love everybody. I treat everybody well. I don't care whether you're black or not. In fact, some of my best friends are black. I don't care what your race is. I treat everybody fairly and well. So I am not a racist, these people think. Well, and that probably is true. They behave in the way they describe. But you see, they're guilty too. And this is the way systemic racism goes. Well, it said systemic racism, the systems are racist. And you can be racist without even knowing it. Because you're part of a system that is racist. And you see, that is what I call sick guilt. But it's useful for manipulating people. People say, well, no, I mean, I'm personally a good person. You know, I would never use the N-word or anything like that. But I know the very system we're part of is racist. Now, that's what I hear a lot of the past week and a half from our big establishment entities. And government going on about systemic racism, and the beautiful thing about that is, like the term inappropriate, it can mean whatever you want it to mean. It's very loose, very hard to define. What's inappropriate? Well, what is inappropriate is whatever I say I don't like. So you have to get inside my mind and try to figure out what it is I don't like, so you don't say or do something that might be inappropriate. So sick guilt is being widely spread, and spread regrettably by some of our big institutions. I was talking to a stockbroker this afternoon, a good friend of mine, and we were talking about various things, and I was sharing with him, and he shares with me, complete contempt for much of corporate Canada. My feeling is these people give whores a bad name. I'll tell you why. Here's an example. Stockwell Day was a successful Alberta politician. He was a provincial minister of finance. He ran for the old Reform Party, which became the Canadian Alliance. And he was briefly the leader of the Canadian Alliance. Stockwell Day is a committed evangelical Christian. And when he was in active politics, he raised the ire and the contempt of many of the Beyond Pensants because of his Christian beliefs. They mocked him as a fundamentalist Bible-believing Christian. Okay, well, he left politics eventually, and he's gone on to sit on various boards, and he's become a successful businessman. Well, everything collapsed for Stockwell Day, or I should say much of his world collapsed, on Tuesday. He was interviewed on Power and Politics, which is a show of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And they were discussing this Black Lives Matter thing and systemic racism and so on. And Stockwell Day said, well, he didn't think Canada was a racist country. He said, that, I mean, there's a small minority of people, of bad people, he says, who are probably prejudiced, but it's not a racist country. And I think, in terms of tolerance, Canada really is a very tolerant place. I don't like the term racist because it was invented by Jewish communists, Lev Davidovich Bronstein or Trotsky. And it, too, has not very clear definition. You can term racist anything that you don't like that has to do in some way with race. If I say, I would prefer to live in a neighborhood with other people like me, and they say, oh, what's that? I say, well, European people. Well, you're a racist. Anyway, Stockwell Day, his position was that Canada was not a particularly racist country, it's a tolerant country, and so on. And I would certainly agree, it certainly is a tolerant country, probably far too tolerant. Well, then he said, but I know what prejudice is like. He said, I wore glasses as a little boy in grade school, and I knew the humiliation of being laughed at as four eyes. Have you heard anything yet that has you grinding your teeth with rage? About just spit white hot ashes of rage? No, I had neither. That's what Stockwell they said. He didn't conclude it with a colored joke or using pejorative terms for any of the privileged minority. No, that was his position. He knew what it was like to be the victim of prejudice because as a small boy, he had to wear glasses and other kids laughed at him. Well, you would have thought Stockwell Day had put on a robe and paraded as a member of the Ku Klux Klan. The outrage. And basically, it was, we don't care about the sufferings of a white guy. Or none of the things he ever suffered could match what we suffered. This is a victim steeplechase. He's not really a victim. I'm much more of a victim because I'm black. Actually, those of us who are white are the victims of having our country betrayed by our rascally political elite and an organized third world invasion which will replace us. We're the victims. But anyway, back to Stockwell Day. Well, his remarks were utterly unacceptable. I think a fair amount of person would say, but why? Those were his experiences and his feelings. Is he not entitled to feelings? Is he not entitled to remember he felt excluded as a child because he wore glasses? Well, why must his reality be denied? Anyway, within a day, he was persuaded to resign as a corporate director of the big telephone giant in Western Canada, TELUS, T-E-L-U-S, forced to resign. Now, when I first heard that he'd been fired from the board, I said, that's not possible. He's an elected director. The shareholders elect him along with other directors. Somebody else can't unelect him. Turns out he submitted his resignation. I'm wondering what pressure was brought to bear on him. And the churlish statement that came out of TELUS was that his values did not accord with the values of TELUS. And my stockbroker friend and I both snickered. Well, what values are those? To make money. Now, why would Stockwell Day have been elected as a member, nominated? They're almost always the nominees get elected, nominated to the board of directors. Well, because as a former politician, he has a certain gravitas and a name. Apparently, TELUS is so running scared of minorities. Who knows what they're really running scared of? There aren't that many blacks in Western Canada. Well, what's the issue? Now, some people will say, well, people would say, well, how can you have Stockwell Day as the director? Because he made those insensitive remarks. I mean, assuming they even were insensitive. Well, I'll tell you, here's the answer. Stockwell Day, first of all, was elected by a majority of the shareholders of TELUS. So he duly got his position by being elected. Secondly, he was nominated in the first place because of his experience in politics, in government, and his knowledge of the business world. And my understanding is that Stockwell Day is a director of a number of other companies as well. That would be the answer. And Stockwell Day spoke as an individual. Stockwell Day didn't say, and I'm representing TELUS on this. He didn't do that. Once again, cowardice, just gut-twisting cowardice wins out. Okay. Now, Stockwell Day was also a member of Macmillan, and that used to be Macmillan Binch. It's a big law firm that does a lot of political lobbying. So he was a member of the firm. And these firms, especially ones that deal with government, love to attract, and they pay them big salaries, of former politicians, because that impresses clients. Clients will say, "Well, okay, you've got people in your firm that know the score, that know how to get things done in the world of politics, or in, I should say, in the world of government." And that would be why he and a number of other politicians are snapped up by big law firms. In the belief that their presence there will impress clients, and it probably does. Anyway, he was persuaded to resign, and I suspect in that case he was pretty much told, you resign or we will resign you. And again, you have to ask yourself, why? I mean, first of all, his remarks were completely inoffensive. He was only talking about how he had felt. But even that's not allowed. What I find is more is as frightening as the cowardice of these public bodies, or these corporate bodies, is the utter lack of justice. You know, some people would say, well, this was a witch hunt. I go a step further. The witches were granted a trial. Now, it might have been a stacked trial, depending on how it was conducted. And I won't go into that because it's really a sideshow issue. But at least they were granted a trial where they could be heard. You know, they might not necessarily be believed, but I mean, there's no trial. You're gone. You're expendable. And that is part of the new hideous reality in Canada, the politically correct reality. As I was saying to my stockbroker friend, you know, we're all expendable. I mean, somebody like Stockwell Day, well-known former politician, he'd been long out of politics. I think he got out about 15 years ago or so. So he's, I wouldn't say quite a senior presence, but an experienced presence. And he's gone because of a child reminiscence? Gone from the board of directors of a major company in this country? Gone from an important law firm? Pathetic. And it's an echo of what happened to television personality, sports personality, Don Cherry, last November. Don Cherry was a rough, tough former coach, and that was his persona. A supporter of the old style of hockey, the rough and tumble, hit him hard, body check type, and a political conservative. Anyway, last November, just before Poppy Day, before Remembrance Day on November the 11th, Don Cherry remarked on his show that he was upset that many people had forgotten about the poppy, wearing the poppy, and he made the comment you people, he said, come to this country and enjoy our freedoms, our prosperity, and all that. Drop a few bucks, spend a few bucks, he said, and buy a poppy. Now, you would think, I haven't heard anything that has me falling out of my chair with rage. No, the very fact he referred to immigrants, or it was a somewhat ambiguous several sentences, but it could be read as referring to immigrants. You people. Again, though, the reality is that many of the people who do not wear the poppy in and around Toronto are newcomers who maybe don't know what the symbolism is, or knowing, don't care. I'll tell you why they wouldn't care. Because it wasn't their war. They weren't even Canadians when it happened. And often, being very selfish, they will say, or perhaps wouldn't put this exactly into words, but what's it to us? This was an old white man thing. That's the problem, of course, bringing people to this country that are radically different. But anyway, for that little comment, you people, essentially saying, get with the agenda, show some respect, drop a few bucks and buy a poppy. Now, you wouldn't think this was a particularly radical or hardcore thing. Well, anyway, it was deemed to be, and within 48 hours, Mr. Hockey Night in Canada 37 years experience, Don Cherry was fired. Dropped from the coach's corner on a hockey night in Canada. And kicking him under the bus was not only the employer, at Sportsnet, but the National Hockey League said, oh, his values did not represent their commitment to diversity. And then probably what hurt most of all were the scumbags at the Royal Canadian Legion, not the members, but the higher-ups, said that, yes, Don Cherry, they applauded his demise because his values did not reflect their commitment to diversity. I laugh, but it's really not funny. They were quite happy to accept all the money that his personal endorsement raised. He wasn't being paid. This was not a paid advertising gig. And I said at the time, if they can get Grapes, that was his nickname, Don Cherry, if the politically correct, the fanatics, can get rid of Don Cherry, who's safe? Well, I think we can ask that same question again tonight. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to turn now to a fellow who's a great singer, has a fantastic voice. He's a very committed Christian, a man who has had some ups and downs in his personal life. This is Randy Travis, and hope you like it. This is my musical break for tonight.
Listen to how this song chair, just sitting there. I've spent a lot of time thinking of this perfect love I know is yours and mine. And oh, how I love that old picture on the wall of you and me and the kids, my most favorite times in life I've spent right here where we live. There's no place like home. There's no staring at her photograph. old lost love story. It's sad, but it's true. There was a time when she was mine.
Suppose I cried and said I think I finally learned my lesson.
And I'm tired of spending all my time alone. If I told you that I realize you're all I ever wanted, and it's killing me to be so far away, would you tell me that you love me too? And would we cry together? Or would you simply laugh at me and say, someday you come crawling back and asking me to take you in? I told you so, but you had to go. Now I found somebody new, and you will never break my heart in two again. Down on my knees and told you I was yours forever, would you get down on yours too and take my hand? Would we get that old time feeling? Would we laugh and talk for hours the way we did when our love first began? Would you tell me that you've missed me too, and that you've been so lonely, and you've waited for the day that I'll return, and we'd live in love forever, and that I'm your one and only? Or would you say the table's finally turned? Would you say I told you so? Oh, I told you so.
That's Randy Travis, I told you so. This is Paul Fromm, I told you so. You're on the fighting side of me, back with you again tomorrow. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and